Let's Talk Letts, an original podcast from the Lettings Hub.
Hello, and welcome to our latest episode of our podcast, Let's Talk Letts. I'm Heidi Shackle, the CEO of the Lettings Hub, the tenant referencing business that got good at tech. Let's Talk Letts is our regular roundup of news and views on a whole range of subjects spanning the private rented sector. In this episode, we're going to be discussing the importance of effective budgeting and planning your company's finances in advance. I appreciate a lot can change during any year. And I think at this point in the year, if we look back to the start of 2023, there would be many things that have changed from where we sit now. But without a starting point and an expectation to benchmark your performance against, then how do you know if you're ahead of, behind, where you need to be? And you need to make sure you do that to be able to cover all your outgoings and hopefully make a profit. So let's get started. And today I'm joined by one of our very own, the Lettings Hub's Finance Director, Nick Reynolds. It's lovely to have you here, Nick. Please introduce yourself to our listeners and share a little bit about how we work together.
Hi, Heidi. Great to be here. I joined the Lettings Hub as Finance Director around 1 year ago, right when we were about to start the 2023 budget process. So background again.
Absolutely. Here we go. Second time round. Although the second time round has been obviously quite a lot quicker. Now we've kind of got the practices in place and all the things that we've obviously kind of measured throughout the year. Absolutely. So I appreciate our listeners may come from different sized businesses and have totally different backgrounds. And we're definitely not trying to teach anyone to suck eggs. But hopefully during this session, we can give people some tips and some advice and just kind of things to consider when budgeting. So we have just finished our budget setting process here, but how often should a business ideally set a budget and when is the best time of year to do it?
Yeah, I think every business should take that time to set a budget at least once a year. How long it takes really depends on how much detail and the wider business involvement you put in. It can be helpful to reforecast if the landscape or outlook changes and help you keep a clear view of the future, but your budget should stay fixed for 1 year.
Yeah. And I suppose a budget really, in other words, is just like a financial plan.
Absolutely.
As in what you hope your incomings are going to be, what you hope your outgoings are going to be, and then trying to work out what that means at the bottom.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, you can do it on a calendar year or financial year, but it generally makes more sense to do it on your financial year so that you can always link it back to your accounts so that when you get to towards your statutory end of year accounts, you can make that progress and you can see your final goals.
Okay, so I guess no one likes a surprise. And so how is it best to keep track of a budget throughout that financial year in terms of what would you suggest businesses do? I don't know, daily, weekly, monthly, half yearly, to kind of keep track of progress.
Keeping that record is a really good starting point of using your management accounts. So if you produce those monthly, that's a great place to start. If you're a bit smaller and your business doesn't have an accountant, then even just knowing what your bank account says on a month to month or week to week basis, have you paid all your suppliers? Has that big contract come in? Has everybody paid you? So you know exactly where you're up to.
And I guess then communicating that with your wider team, dependent on who you want to share that information with, also becomes really important because they're the ones that often can help pull different levers during the month, during the next period of time to give a better result at the end of the next month.
Yeah, communication is key and clarity of what you're sharing so that everyone within your business knows exactly what you're doing.
Okay, so obviously we know that letting agents kind of come in all shapes and sizes, and actually they come from very different backgrounds. So some people very much might come with a whole load of knowledge about how to produce a budget and might even come from a financial background themselves. Others may have had a life previously, let's say in sales and marketing, and will have seen the numbers from a totally different viewpoint, or even compliance or tech as a background, and therefore they might not quite know where to start. Is it as simple as getting an Excel sheet or a piece of paper? And what would you kind of suggest they put on it? What do we do? How do we start?
Yeah, I think obviously having the people around you that know your business is key. So it might be yourself or it might be your first line of management to make sure that you've got all the right people that know what's going on so you can pull that together. quickly. And yeah, just start with that Excel file. You can put as much detail as you want. Where it becomes more important is when you get to comparing to the actuals and understanding the different levers you've pulled to get to that result. For example, is it price that's driven your growth? Is it volume that's driving that growth? So that when that doesn't happen, or it does, but it happens better than you planned, you know exactly why, and you can then react appropriately to either grow. You know, if you're looking at it, for example, and you say, we're beating our revenue. Well, is that because you've got more volume, so therefore you might need more people to help you? Or is it purely price? So you've got all the extra revenue just from selling it at a higher price. So therefore, the volume of people you've got is great and everything's fine. But you need to understand what's driving those different factors so that you can react accordingly.
And I think as well, I suppose it's understanding what we would look at as margin on a product line, so, or a revenue line, as in you might look at it and it might be growing really nicely, I suppose, or you might be satisfied that it's against plan, but it could still be that it's costing you more to produce it than was planned, or that actually you realize. Why is margin so important?
Yeah, for the reasons you say, Heidi, margin is so important that you know anyone could sell anything for free or for a lower price. And so keeping an eye on how much your sales teams and your overheads are costing you versus that revenue is really critical. And so just as simple as saying, well, my net profit is X and divide that by your total revenue line tells you that margin. And as long as it is static or going up, or even if it is going down, but you know why, you're in a good place.
Well, I suppose it also helps you understand, there's obviously a key difference between profit and cash. And especially when something hits your management accounts in your profit line, but the cash may come later. So I guess in lettings businesses, revenue is more frequent or more predictable. But in a sales business or a lettings business wanting to venture into sales, what you end up having is a lot of cost in advance. You know, you've got to go and do the viewings. You've got to attract the vendor in the first place, the seller. You've got to do the marketing of that property, et cetera, et cetera. And then it might be many, many months, especially in what seems to be the UK sector, before you receive any money for that transaction. So how do people kind of, I suppose, predict cash flow differently to how they might report on profit?
Yeah, I mean, without getting through all the technicals of how we put the accounting together, but yeah, you're absolutely right. It can vary quite a lot. Rent is your, you know, from a business perspective, renting of your property is usually one that's paid quarterly, but you don't want it to hit your accounts quarterly, because otherwise you end up with very lumpy results and doesn't really help you understand your business. So yeah, keeping track of that is really key. And again, a good forecast or a good budget will help you to know how much are you putting in to generate those sales, to know that you're on track. And then really it's understanding your historics, understanding, have you achieved what you said you were going to do with the amount you put in? If you spend £5,000 on marketing, do you get the £20,000 of revenue you expected? And regardless of how long that takes, you need to keep an eye on it and be aware of what's going on.
And I suppose what that does is, you know, when you understand when your cash is falling and when that cash is needed to be paid out again, it helps you make the decisions about what you can invest in and what you can spend next, I suppose, to grow, or seasonally, what you need to know. So if you've got a quiet spell, you might need to prepare for that way in advance. So what your bank balance says isn't really necessarily the true story, is it, of what's going on?
Yeah, you've really got to know who owes you and what you owe to people, so that you don't just look at that bank balance and assume it's right.
Yeah. My husband, for example, he runs a tree surgery business and a firewood business, and obviously their business is hugely seasonal. So obviously as they sit in March, what they may have in their bank account looks particularly healthy sometimes, compared to when you get to September, when you've had to buy in all the wood ready for the next season. So I guess that's kind of what I'm saying. You've got to also think about what you've got to outlay next and what comes next in terms of when the next lot of revenue is coming in. So during a year, obviously there can be changes, I suppose, at any time. In the last short period of time, we've had the autumn statement where the Chancellor has announced fairly big changes this year to minimum wage. We obviously know that we're a people industry, and therefore it could have an effect on all of our clients. It has an effect on us as an organisation. So when you have an impact to the financial projections that you've already got, or if you have a change in circumstance, which is, you know, you've acquired a business, let's say, or you've acquired a portfolio that you obviously that changes your financial results, how is it best to plan and make amendments to the plan that you set out at the beginning of the year?
Yeah, I think one thing you can certainly be sure of is change, especially the further into the future you're looking. You know, as we said, we're sat here, we've done our budget for next year. That's sort of 12, 13 months out that we're looking. And so our accuracy of our next quarter is far greater than our quarter four. But it really just comes down to understanding those levers of your business, I think. If you put that budget together with the detail, you stand a much better chance of being able to explain it when things start to change. So whether that is minimum wage has come in the middle of your year and you hadn't predicted it, at least you can understand that it's not that you've got more people, it's that your people are costing you more. There's no six rules on how often you do your budget. If you want to do it again at mid-year, you can do. It's an internal piece of work that helps. Generally speaking, you're reporting either to a board or other investors that are really interested in that fixed budget, which is where forecasts come in. And so you do a revised forecast, keep your budget the same and change your forecast. And you can change that as often as you like, whether you want to do that monthly or whether you want to do that quarterly, or even just once every 6 months, just so that you've got some idea of what's affecting your business now rather than what it was a year ago.
I suppose the visibility, though, is the critical thing, isn't it? It's not being scared of the numbers and it's not being scared to look, because it's actually worse if you don't look, because there could be something that's going way ahead of plan that you're a little bit oblivious to, and actually with a bit more effort or a bit of a turn in resource to focus on it, it could do significantly well, or something is actually doing the opposite.
Yeah, I think that's where you can also set yourself targets. So you know your budget might well just be, this is what we plan to do, whereas a target generally can be a little bit more aspirational. So what could we do if we really thought big? You know, if we increase this customer by 100% rather than just 20%, you know, just really thinking a little bit bigger and really challenging yourself to do those bigger things. And as I say, if you know what levers you're pulling and you know how that affects your business, you've got a pretty strong chance of hitting those aspirational targets as well.
Yeah, I learned very early on in my career that there's only really three ways to grow a business, really, or to grow your revenue, which is either to sell more, to charge more, or to cut your cost, I suppose, so it affects your profit number. It's what we do is, I suppose, we consider all of those options against each of the things that we sell or each of the suppliers that provide services to us. So we can consider whether we can do any of those things against that revenue line, or whether there's new revenue lines that we could obviously create. I suppose what that kind of brings us on to is thinking about your suppliers. So when you set your budget, I always think it's quite a good kind of sense check, if nothing else, where you can take a step back and just kind of look at what you've spent with certain companies over the year and understand whether you genuinely feel, on a gut feel basis, before anything else, did we get value for money? Did they really help our business this year? Is there a feeling that there is better out there? How would you conduct a supplier review?
Yeah, I think keeping an eye on all of your expenditure is really important. And so you start, as you say, you start by looking at what you spent, what is the value for money, depending on how much time you've got available to you, look at what else is out there on the market. You know, we talked a little bit about outsourcing, insourcing your different available supply to get better value for money, you know.
So I think that's the thing, isn't it? The insourcing, outsourcing argument's quite interesting. And I went to a conference recently, probably some of our listeners were there as well, where the message was outsource everything that is not your core skill. So whatever your core skill is, keep that, do that, because you'll probably do that really well. And because it's your business, or, you know, you work within that business, you're going to do it really, really well. But everything else where it kind of is secondary or even lower down than that to you, then actually go and get the experts to help you, because that's the best way to help your business grow. sometimes, though, I guess it can feel a more expensive option. And we sometimes have that, let's say with referencing, let's use tenant referencing as an example, where a letting agent would feel that it's easier and cheaper for them to do it in-house than to necessarily outsource it. So what would be kind of your advice maybe on when you make that consideration in sourcing or outsourcing, what should people really be thinking about?
I think for me, it comes down to risk. And things like budgets, for example, are probably a fairly low risk thing. It's your internal business. How you want to grow that business is entirely up to you. It's harder to outsource something like that. However, your accounting team, you know, anyone could have a go on some of the available software out there and do it on a spreadsheet if you want to. It comes down to risks when you don't know quite what you're doing and you put things in the wrong place, or you don't know where you're looking to add it all together, and you do it wrong. And that can get you into some hot water with HMRC or with the company's house, and for not reporting things on time. You know, it can have a very detrimental effect on your business or the confidence that your customers or suppliers have in you.
Yeah. And I suppose as well, it's then actually understanding the underlying of it might look on the face of it to be a higher price to pay to outsource it, but you would hope the quality of what you get is higher. And I suppose what you would not, you know, sometimes we are a little bit blind to the fact how much time do these things actually take when you add it all up. Just giving it to somebody and kind of making it part of their job role is one thing, but you then have to consider what that person could do instead and how much value they could add elsewhere. What about finding an accountant then? Because not only is it, you know, good, some businesses obviously need an accountant because they've got regulatory reporting, etc. Some might choose to have one, but how do you find a good one? And how, I suppose we like to have an accountant because they're a really good kind of sounding board, aren't they? They're a good sanity check for us to make sure everything that we've done is right. But also they can help us with tax advice, which means that, you know, are we putting the right things in the right place to make the business as efficient and as effective as possible so that we have more money available to reinvest, I guess, back in the business? What would your advice be on choosing an accountant and how best can they help a customer?
I think it's like so many things, you know, you've got to trust the people you're working with, especially if you don't already have an accountant. You know, be honest with what support and advice you need. As a professional service, it's like going to a solicitor or, you know, a lawyer. You know that you know less than they do. There's no need to try and sell them that your knowledge. But the more advice, the more clear you are with the advice that you require from them, the better it will be. And looking at different options, you know, as usual with these things, never take the first offer or the first person you go to. Get a few quotes, get a few ideas, speak to other people in the industry. As you say, Heidi, there's plenty of events and there's plenty of other people that will go through the same thing that can probably support and advise as well. And you're right, the tax is a real big important piece of that. There are so many legitimate ways to limit how much tax you pay, but you always want to seek that advice on from your accountant, because the rules change not all the time, but regularly enough that you need to be aware of it. And the important thing to always remember with HMRC is that all the returns you do are self-certified and self-completing. So whilst you might think you've got away with it in year one, if they decide in the future to look back, they will come after you for any fines or any interest of anything that you have misrepresented. And it will not look good on you if you have got it wrong. So
yeah, and it goes back all years, doesn't it? It doesn't just stop at that year. It's
absolutely historic. Yeah, they will take the time to collect any money that's owed to them in the end.
Yeah, absolutely. I suppose the other thing then is just obviously when we think about revenues, we can't always predict external factors. We can't predict the market. We don't seem to be able to predict what the government might do at certain times, as an example. So I suppose it's really important that if your revenues have fallen or they're not in line with what you hoped they would be or what you really needed them to be to support your business, I suppose it's really important to understand what levers to pull to limit the cost. So you've always, I suppose, got a plan B.
Yes. Yes. And that comes down to, again, knowing how your business operates. You almost want a best and worst case. So you say, if everything goes to plan, this is exactly what I will do. But I could also run my business with a limited number of suppliers or a limited number of people. And unfortunately, people do tend to be the first thing that are easiest to adjust. You know, from a cold-hearted finance perspective, if you've got a shortfall in your revenues, you have to make that limit. It could be actually just in a seasonal business that you just don't grow as quickly as you wanted. So when you get to your peak season, you don't take on that temporary resource that you plan to. You limit that because you can cope with what you've got. You've got to always look further ahead. I think if you are going through a very rough patch for a short period of time, you don't necessarily want to knee-jerk and get rid of your best expert advisors and support people around you if the business is coming back. And so you've got to take that longer term view, which is where forecasting and budgeting definitely help you to go, am I just in my seasonal lull, or is this a bigger, more serious problem that I've got to deal with?
So, Nick, I suppose on the flip side, Nick, it's also if businesses are particularly buoyant and are growing. I know you're a pessimistic accountant, so you're going to kind of think of the worst case, but it's also to be really optimistic, isn't it? And think of the possible and what if as you're going through that process.
Definitely. Yeah, you can get stuck with us prudent accountants that will always want to just hold back and stick in the mud, if you like. But yeah, you absolutely have to grow that business and look at what the future could hold. And being hyper aware of where you're putting in extra resource or extra plans to grow that business. And then you'll be in a much stronger place. If you don't have those plans, it can be very easy to sort of fall foul of missing those targets and not making the profits and the margins you plan to.
And I think there's many different ways, isn't there, to skin a cat, as they would say, i.e., if you think your current team are at capacity, and then it's like, okay, if I need another person at £25,000-£30,000, that's another £30,000 cost to my business, plus national insurance, plus pension, plus, and it can suddenly seem a little bit overwhelming. There's a couple of things that we've learned over time that have definitely helped. So first of all, you don't always need a full-time resource, even if you think in the long term you do. Taking somebody on a part-time basis has definitely worked for us. And also, based on the circumstances, usually, and we have quite a big part-time cohort in amongst our employees, that actually sometimes they want to do a little bit more, or at certain times of the year or at certain times of the day they can do a bit more. So as you start to grow even further, then often that person can grow with you. The second thing is, we have, like many businesses, had people that leave, and when they leave for a variety of reasons, but one of the reasons they leave, it's always a good time, I suppose, to kind of go, do we really want to replace this role like for like? Do we want to change something? And how does it work? But when we've had people that leave, and I can think of Abby as an example, she left us because she wanted to train to be a nurse. And unfortunately, we couldn't really fulfill her career ambition at that time. But what we did work out as we went through kind of an exit process with her, and we spoke to her about it and actually just chatted with her, that actually she would love a part-time job. She would love to have flexibility because she's only going to be doing so many hours at college and so many hours in placement. So we have Abby on a 0 hours contract, and we then ask her to work when we need it, and she gets extra money when she needs it. And it's been a perfect solution. We now have about 6 employees on a 0 hours basis that kind of come in and support us when we're particularly busy or we need them. The other thing is, this year for the first time, we've taken on an apprentice. We were all really hopeful that would work out for us, but also we were a bit skeptical, I suppose. We were a bit unsure because we didn't actually know how it would work out, but it's been brilliant. And it's been so good to see Jack come in and learn so much. I think it definitely comes down to the right person that you pick. I would say that. I think we won the golden prize there because he's amazing. But it's fantastic to know that you're supporting him at that point in his career. And obviously, you know, we pay for his placement when he goes to college. But again, it was a great way to get some skills and some extra manpower into the business. And actually, we've got a really good kind of, I suppose, a deal going on in the fact that he also feels that he's getting really good return, which is brilliant.
Definitely. It works in the finance team as well. We do the same thing. I like to always recruit people with a high energy and a high excitement for the role, and they want and their capacity to learn. You know, they won't have done the role as we want it to be done, and they won't have seen our business before. So trying to recruit knowledge and skills is not as easy as recruiting attitude. And so absolutely the same thing. We will put people through their college and support their financial tuition courses because they're not cheap, and it helps them in their career, and we also benefit from them as they're learning as well. So,
and I suppose then, just to finish, obviously we've seen, we mentioned earlier minimum wage going up. I think it's going up by over £1
right.
in April, which I think is the biggest rise we've ever seen in the past. But also we know the cost of living is real and most suppliers have put their prices up. So how would you suggest you negotiate with a supplier in that scenario? Like, any tips or tricks you can kind of give people on things to be asking or requesting? If the price is going up for something, how can maybe you still make sure you feel like you're getting a really good deal?
I think, yeah, it comes down to that knowledge of your suppliers. So if you have a good working relationship with them and their prices are going up, if you feel like they are still providing you with that expert service, then you're all okay. You've got to always look at the fact that every business within the chain has got to make some money ultimately. And so you don't want to just price people out of the market just to save yourself a few pounds, because that supplier may not be there anymore and ultimately won't want to do you the best service if they don't think they're getting well paid either. But yes, I think it is definitely about having that communication, having that relationship with people. People buy from people, as you've often said before, Heidi, that if you've got that relationship, you will have a better chance of getting that result. And just because you're paying more, you know, doesn't mean they can't do a better service, right? They're having to pay their people more. They should be expecting more from their people as well. Nobody gets anything for free, so.
Agreed. Okay. Thank you very much, Nick. Obviously, this is our very last podcast of the year. So obviously, a happy Christmas to you and a happy Christmas to all of our listeners.
And to you.
But before you go, we do always ask every guest on our podcast a funny story that may have happened to them at some point in their career. What have you got for us?
Well, so not a lot of funny things happen in finance. We're all a bit more serious. But we had this personality profiling done on the whole team quite some years ago to look at how we all work together as a team and working in accounts. It was unsurprisingly, it came back that I was very introverted. But I think the best line in there was that Nick can cope well in social situations, but afterwards he's going to need a lie down.
Okay.
And it's very true.
It's very true. Yeah. You hide it well, though, Nick. You do very well. Very well. And we're very privileged and pleased to have you on our team. So as I mentioned, this is our last episode for 2023, but please look out for our bonus episode released next Wednesday on the 20th of all the funny stories all in one place from this year so far. From myself and Nick, we both wish you a very Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
You can go for your lay down now, Nick.
Thank you very much.
Let's Talk Let's, an original podcast from the Lettings Hub.